helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast with your host, Bill Reichart, National Director of CMDA Campus Ministries.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichart, National Director for Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. And my guest today is Dr. Haywood Robinson. Dr. Robinson, welcome.
It's a blessing to be here, Bill. Thank you for having me.
Well, before we jump in, let me give our listeners and those watching a little thumbnail sketch of your bio and who you are. And you are calling from Texas right now. I know you're down in near College Station. But Dr. Robinson earned a Bachelor's of Science degree from California Institute of Technology, got your MD at the University of California at Irvine, and family practice residency at Martin Luther King Charles Drew Medical Center in Los Angeles, where you practiced medicine up until the point that you moved to Texas with your late wife. And this is from your bio. Since your salvation in 1986, Dr. Robinson has been a voice for the pro-life movement. And today, Dr. Robinson shares his testimony worldwide to expose the facts of the abortion industry and to be a voice for the unborn. And we're going to have a chance for you to kind of recapitulate that story and share with us as it was communicated in this book that I have with me, The Scalpel and the Soul, which is a tremendous read. It's just a tremendous example of God's mercy, grace, and his redemptive work in our lives. And so I'm grateful for you being able to be on the podcast.
And I'm grateful to be here just to share how Jesus can work in anyone's life and how he worked specifically in my life and in my late wife's life.
Yes, because you and your late wife, Noreen, did write this book. Let me just say from the get-go, we know you communicate this in the book that she died in 2021, I believe, complications from COVID. Blessing for you, though, this Valentine's Day this year in 23, you were married to Daphne.
Amen. And it's been a whirlwind. She's wonderful. She did quite a bit of work on this book at the end as far as editing and helping it come together. She has such a eye for detail and such a great writer. I don't see how I could have done it. So God not only gave me a new mate, but gave me a helpmate to get this word out, our testimony of what the Lord did in me and Noreen's life. And it also gave her an insight on what Noreen was like and then what my walk was like with the Lord, specifically with respect to the life issue.
Yes. Well, you are such an advocate for life because your story speaks to a season, particularly during your training years, where you participated in doing abortions, you and your wife. Share a little bit. Let's just start at the beginning of those training years. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, doctors took an oath to do no harm, and yet here you find yourself being trained in doing abortions and realizing that a lot of the training kind of conspired in your experience to dehumanize the patient and depersonalize the patient. And explain a little bit about how your training years and why did you find yourself, because, you know, you say in the book as well, nobody goes to medical school thinking they're going to be doing abortions. And yet you found yourself doing those, I think, particularly in your residency, that is. Explain a little bit of your journey in medical school and how you found yourself at that place.
Yeah, I'll share that, but I'm also going to back out of that so that the believer, particularly, and even those that are in medicine and not necessarily Christian, Hindu, or Muslim, but I was called to do medicine when I was around 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I believe it was a calling, let's just say, maybe somewhat like Samuel hearing a voice saying, you know, let's do medicine. I didn't have any educated people in my family. No one had graduated from college, as a matter of fact. So I grew up wanting to be a physician and never, ever wanted to be anything else. And as I got into residency, I liked the different specialties, but the only specialty that would have worked for me delivering babies, taking care of children, and I just loved older people, was family medicine. And in family medicine training, of course, part of that is obstetrics and gynecology. There's nothing more beautiful, more miraculous than seeing a live human being come out of a another human being, be that passageway, the northern passage through an incision or through the birth canal. Either way, it's such a beautiful thing. And just to think that 40 weeks prior to that, you had a sperm coming together with an egg, and then through God's miraculous growth and differentiation makes a human being, is absolutely miraculous. And we have, you know, science that looks at how this happens. There's no way we can really explain that, how one life comes from another. But our word says Jesus came to bring us life and to bring it more abundantly. And of course, he was speaking about spiritual life. But we have to go back to the beginning of the Bible. The very first commandment in the Bible, in Genesis, is to be fruitful, to have children, to be fruitful and multiply. Be successful and multiply. That's long before any of the Mosaic laws. So this is a basic principle of God. But again, this is something that we as Christians believe, but I believe when we just look at the basic precepts of medicine, and what you mentioned earlier was the Hippocratic Oath.
Yeah.
So we know that was written around 1200 BC. It wasn't religious based. It was based in a belief system that the people who were going to do what was at that time considered modern medicine, Hippocratic medicine, basically four precepts: that we would have patient confidentiality. We would not discuss the proceedings or whatever was discussed or performed on a patient except between the doctor and the patient. And we realize how absolutely important that is. We would not have relations, sexual relations with our patients. We would not be involved with euthanasia or mercy killing. And of course, lastly, the most important one was no abortion. Now, let's just remind ourselves, this is long before there was any technology, no ultrasound, no pregnancy test, no microscope. So how did they know that we shouldn't be doing abortion? Well, it was because they respected the sanctity of human life, independent of, this wasn't the Jewish faith, this wasn't any religious faith. This was just a basic sacred principle of where medicine was supposed to go. Now, we as believers, of course, have another greater level that we serve, because we know that this is underpinned by the belief system of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who just happened to have a son named Jesus Christ, who we believe in. So we have two arms. We can. So the student that's listening to this, or any medical professional, they don't have to say this is a Christian belief. This is a basic precept of modern medicine that is millennia old.
That is such a strong defense for life, and I know that comes out of your deep abiding Christian walk, which has been a journey for you. But how did you find yourself on the other side of this, finding yourself leaning into to doing abortions, especially during your residency?
You know, the enemy works and snags you very often incrementally. You just don't wake up one day and you're a drug addict on the street. You just don't wake up one day, you know, abusing and beating your wife and her having to go to the hospital. What happens, and these are things you don't even realize, that you don't appreciate or recognize that life that you cared about as a four-year-old, that you wanted to help people, etc., that's a sacred life. So what he does, he says, well, so when you have a preborn human, and it's a really little bitty human, that's really not a human because it doesn't look like you, it's too small. We minimize the sanctity of that life. A baby is a baby no matter how small. I think we all know that saying. But what happens is, let's just say you get to the threshold, as we wrote in the book, where that day comes, where they're going to take you into that room and you're going to see your first abortion. Now, I will tell you, I did have somewhat of a, I guess the best way I could explain this term is a cerebral queasiness. Then, okay, so we're gonna go in this room, we're gonna do this abortion. Okay, this woman is gonna have a baby, but now she doesn't wanna have the baby. Oh, okay. And then you see it done, and you watch it and you go, but there's something inside you, or was within me that said, you know, this is just not quite right. But, you know, you've got your faculty around you. You've got your senior residents, and it's this is what we do. And, of course, you're there. You don't want to rock the boat. You're low man on the totem pole, so to speak. So you see another one. But you know what happens? The first one you see as the first step, and this is what I've warned students about, don't even go see those abortions. You don't need to go watch a video of an abortion. The eyes are the window to the soul, and it's the very first step in the desensitization, dehumanization process. Just like pornography, somebody can tell you, oh, just watch it a little bit, or just do a little bit. You'll be okay. No. As soon as you step your foot, you know, in the peanut butter, you're in the peanut butter, right? So first, don't even go see one. And in medicine, you have that old term, but see one, do one, teach one. The next thing you know, they're sitting you down in front of that patient, and you're doing that same procedure. And progressively, it becomes easier and easier because you begin to suppress the sacredness that God put in you. God did not create you to take life. God did not put me in medicine to take life. But we need to remind our students, and of course you will know, that this is just not about abortion. You know, we as believers, we fight not against flesh and blood. This is a spiritual battle. The taking of innocent life is something that's been going on long before the Hippocratic Oath was being written. We know the history of Israel, how the taking of innocent life and the sacrifice of their own children to these false gods, Baal and Molech, is not a new thing. What's happening now is just takes on a different complexion. That's all it is. And we need to recognize that Satan, who was at one time in the presence of God in heaven, was cast out. So the only thing that reminds the devil of God and whose presence he once stood is the human being. We are made in the image of God. And every single human being that the devil sees, be it a one-cell human being or you or me, absolutely angers him because we are made in the image of God. And we as believers have to recognize we represent him, we're going to stand with him, and we're going to fight the shedding of innocent blood. And we've got to save babies and stand against this great Holocaust.
Yeah, that's so important to remember the Imago Dei. And then we were reminded that people are made in the image of God. We see others through a completely different lens. And that's what you talk about so often, is that this depersonalization, I mean, not even looking at the very patient during an abortion, it's treated in a mechanical sense. There's there's nothing there, no care for the woman at all. It's and then so it's the frog in a kettle kind of thing too. It's that incremental, the more you do it, the more easy it is to do the next. And then you also discuss the monetary incentives. It's easy to get all bound up into all of that, and before you know it, you find yourself, fully involved.
Yeah, I'll be the first to say, did I enjoy doing abortions? Of course not. Did I enjoy taking my Saturday morning and driving off to an abortion facility and taking someone's baby? No, but it's amazing how the love of money is the root of all evil. And the money is kind of the anesthesia that helps tolerate that desensitization, dehumanization, because believe me, that the enemy knows how to use money to make you feel a bit more comfortable. When you don't know the Lord, you know, Haywood is Lord, money is Lord, self-indulgence is Lord. And you have to recognize that it's all about me. It's all about me. And you suppress the truth. You know in your heart when you're doing something wrong. You know in your heart when you're stealing time at work. But we tend to suppress these things. And one thing we want to make sure we mention, and that is that right of conscience that you mentioned earlier, since we're talking to students. In our particular country, we don't have as much to worry about as far as being able to act on our right of conscience, but our neighboring country to the north, Canada, is the People's Republic of Canada. It's become communist. We were just there with 40 Days for Life, who I work with, for their martial eye. They are so pro-death. It's absolutely amazing. If you opt out or not want to be involved with abortion as a medical student or a resident, they can kick you out of the program. You have no right of conscience. And that's, we have to recognize that's generally how the totalitarian system works, right? Think about this. You think about a bill and the students and the faculty or whoever is listening, that when I get a license to practice medicine, the way we think of it is that it's kind of like a driver's license. It says I'm qualified to drive this vehicle or whatever with a medical license. I'm a physician and surgeon in the state of Texas, thereby licensed, and I can practice. Well, what the state tends to do at this point is say, well, no, the state issues you the license, therefore you are an agent of the state, therefore you will comply with what we say in the utilization of your license, which will include indeed abortion and euthanasia. Do you see how they switch the thinking? So now your autonomy as a practitioner is taken away and you become an agent of the state.
Hmm. I want to talk about the kind of the hinge moment in your story, because, you know, it'd be very easy to have your conscience seared and just find yourself kind of continuing to go along in that system of you know, doing the abortions, you know, cashing the checks and just continuing to persist in that. But there was a move, obviously, from L.A. to Texas, where you are currently, that kind of interrupted a little bit of that commitment, as you were going to find yourself doing those as really as much in Texas. But it was more than that. There was that hinge moment spiritually that I think really need to address, because it is the power of the love of Christ that really can show one that there is hope, that our failures are not fatal, that there is redemption. And that could be, this whole issue, there's a lot of woundedness, a lot of brokenness, and a lot of grief, and a lot of regret. But you found a deliverance. Talk about that journey, that piece of it.
And I think it's important that we all as believers share our testimony, because it's like a fingerprint. They're unique to each and every believer. Well, my particular encounter with the Lord, now I was raised going to church, but I never heard the gospel. I didn't know what it meant to be saved or born again. Those are totally foreign terms to me. However, after moving to Texas and meeting a pastor who befriended my mother and then became my patient, invited me and my wife to a Christian music concert. When the concert finally came, my wife was only 2 to 3 weeks from delivering. She did not feel like going to the concert. I took my mother. Well, during the intermission of that concert, which is Leon Patillo was singing, he's one of the great contemporary Christian artists of the 80s, and he's still out there singing, a beautiful man. He said, for those in the audience that want things to be 100% right with God, to stand up. And he prefaced that statement with, I'm not going to cover the four spiritual laws. I'm not going to tell you about the cross and salvation. Just if you want things to be 100% right with God, to stand up. Because, you know, if he would have said those things, I probably would have said, I don't want to hear that spiel. You know, I would have maybe gone to the restroom or something. But I said, yeah, who wouldn't want things to be 100% right with God? I'll shoot for that. And I stood up. And he prayed what was, I would say, would be the equivalent of a sinner's prayer. And again, I didn't know what I was praying so much, but that was God's encounter with me. This was my Damascus Road, maybe not quite as dramatic as Saul's, but that was the time that the Lord said, here's where BC and AD, and this is where the old Haywood dies. Now, it just so happened when that our youngest child was going to be born in about 2 to 3 weeks. I knew, now when I came home from that concert after dropping my mother off, I knew something had happened. I didn't know what it was. I felt different. I felt clean. I felt lighter. I'm saying, well, you know, what is going on? I didn't tell my wife because I didn't know what to tell her. So, but the God always has it all figured out. the godfather for this baby that was going to be born was the son of a Pentecostal preacher. So it turned out when I start sharing with him all these things, he starts crying. And he says, well, he and his wife had been praying for me and my wife to come to the Lord. So then he explained to me the basics of the gospel. This would have been back in 1986. And all I can say, since that time, it's been a whirlwind. The Lord has used our past with abortion. Now, of course, I was going to hell long before I even went to medical school. But what God tends to do is use you in the area where you can best impact the kingdom of God, to add to the kingdom, and of course fight the enemy. And of course, he says, well, Heywood, you know, we're going to put you in the army that's going to fight against the devil, against abortion and taking of innocent blood, and because I love babies. And that's what he did with my wife and I. Put me in a really good church, discipled me well. And as I shared with you earlier, Bill, been a part of CMDA, and it's just been a beautiful walk.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the work that God has you today, 40 Days of Life, right? 40 Days for Life.
40 Days for Life started. I had to remind myself, I am the most tenured individual in the organization. I used to say I was the oldest, but it makes you feel more sophisticated when you say you're the most tenured. Well, this was an organization that started. The precursor organization was the Brazos Valley Coalition for Life. And here's the way it started. We had this young lady by the name of Lauren Gouldy, who was a junior at the time that Planned Parenthood announced that they were building a facility in the city. This young Catholic girl, in her righteous indignation, the best way I could say was kind of like a David, you know, looking over at his brothers, father shivering in their boots, and this Goliath defiling, you know, the army of the living God. He says, you know, the way she saw it, no, we're going to fight this thing. She didn't have any resources. We didn't have a strategic plan. But she called a meeting at St. Mary's Catholic Church right across the street from the university, Texas A&M University, where they have a number of students at the time. It was about 65,000 students, and as you know, that's the reason Planned Parenthood would choose a town like that. When you have that large student body, you have a lot of sexual activity in young people and unintended pregnancy. So they saw College Station as a gold mine. Well, our first goal for the Brazos Valley College for Life was we're going to try to stop this thing from opening. Well, we were not successful in doing that. But what the Lord one day said, here's what I want you to do. Simple. I want you to stand in front of Planned Parenthood for 40 days, 40 nights, peacefully, prayerfully, praying that the place close, praying that we save babies. Boom. It's funny how God can give you something simple and you're going, well, is that all? Well, that's enough? Sure, you follow through with that. What we found, Bill, was every time that we were in front of there with a prayer vigil, that their no-show rate would go as high as 75%. We know a lot of people would just drive by and see us praying, and they may have been sitting on the fence and, oh, there are people praying out there. I'm not going to go through with this. There's people whose hearts were changed who may have gone in for maybe their early assessment or whatever and saw us there and changed their mind. So what happened was we found, and we checked this with state statistics, in addition to us counting cars and how many people are going in and out, that yes, indeed, during the times that we were having those prayer vigils as 40 Days for Life in front of these abortion facilities, babies were saved. And another famous case happened, Abby Johnson, who you're probably familiar with, came out of that facility. Mm-hmm. She started as once she saw the light, she left and now has a basically a global ministry to former abortion workers. And also that babies would be saved. You save thousands of babies, facilities have been closed, people left. And you know, we went from one prayer campaign, Bill, one campaign in College Station, Texas. We have during our two 40-day campaigns, which occur in the spring and the fall, around 700 around the planet. We are now through Europe, Latin America, Mexico, Central America, South America, India, UK, all around, all, you know, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, all right here, starting in Bryan College Station, Texas.
Wow, that's
and I'm blessed to be a part of it. I'm technically, my role, my official title is Director of Medical Affairs and Education, and it's a blessing to work with such a wonderful organization who's laser focused on this particular ministry.
Tremendous movement of God, and using the spiritual weapons that are needed to fight that's the fight that's being fought. It's a spiritual battle, and you're using those spiritual weapons of prayer. And I think this is, again, an exciting opportunity for individuals to engage in doing something that is meaningful and effective. And it's just exciting to watch how God has taken that from right there in Texas and spread all across the world. And praise the Lord, He's using you and for His purposes. Let's go back. I want to kind of put a bow on our conversation by talking about students again. You've been speaking directly to students. There are students that are facing challenges in their training. They're feeling confronted by having to compromise or, you know, involve themselves in something that they wouldn't. And it doesn't just happen, of course, in as a student, but in and through the residency. When they're even interviewing for residencies, we had a guest a couple months ago with an organization called Conscience in Residency, helping students navigate and negotiate their residency interviews over right of conscience issues that they have to, you know, identify as, so that they can avoid some of the potential pitfalls and challenges that they might face later on. What would you say to students? What would you say to those in training, residents even? How can they stand courageously? How can they not go with the flow and find themselves incrementally pulled in to these kinds of violations of their conscience, so to speak?
Well, I think first we need to recognize, now as a believer, let's start there. I believe we are intimidated. I believe a lot of the students, well, I know this for a fact, are actually fearful. First, we've got to ask the Lord, deliver us from our fear. God has made us to be the head and not the tail. We're kind of hovering around in the corner. We know the truth, but we feel like, well, we're kind of like Elijah after he's slain those priests of Baal. We're the last ones left. I'm just going to cower down in the corner here, bid out my time, get my degree. I'm out of here. No. Everywhere we are, we're supposed to be representing the Lord. Mm. They should not be afraid to speak the truth, not an opinion, okay? Mm. Life is not based in an opinion, it's based in science. And say, when you do an abortion, you are taking away a life. When they say stupid stuff like abortion is medicine, you tell them, no, abortion is not medicine, no more than euthanasia is medicine. And the reason you're saying that and printing it in these journals and stuff, abortion is medicine, abortion is primary care, is because you're just doing what you commonly will see. If you say something loud enough and often enough, it becomes true.
Exactly.
No, abortion is not medicine, and it never will be. We don't have to shout out treating heart disease as medicine, because we know it is. Okay.
Good point.
So they shouldn't be afraid to say no, that this whole abortion issue is something that's newly accepted to medicine and should not have been grafted into our history, our long history. 1200 BC or so in Hippocratic Oath was written that we did not do these things. We did not have to sign on to be the executioner, so to speak, for Roe versus Wade. Mm. We did not have to do that. We should have stood against that and not be afraid to speak the truth. We think that we represent opinion. We don't represent opinion. We represent truth. There is such a thing as truth. And if you do an abortion and you take that life, that ends the life of the child. There's some people who still try to make an argument whether, you know, life begins at conception. No, you know, that's such a wasted argument. You take them to the first chapter of the embryology book. Science is on our side. Mm. Now, for the believer, we know what Jesus thought of babies and how much he loved children. So there's no question why our faith, why we should all be pro-life. We should be embracing life, just because we should recognize the baggage and the sequelae of what happened by accepting this, you're killing 90% of Down's babies simply because they're not quite as smart as us, or they might have some heart disease. We're killing people with genetic diseases and in different parts of the world, sex selection abortion. There's a consequence to this, and we shouldn't be, this should not be. How we can be so tolerant to other groups, right, for the ideology, but we can't be tolerant to a person with Downs? What's that about?
Yeah. I like the way you use an analogy about how this whole issue is like a cancer. And, you know, yes, there's a child being killed, but it goes even beyond that. It affects the patient, obviously. It affects the doctor. And the whole systems become impacted by abortion and by these decisions. So it's nefarious, and it's... Yeah, it's obviously, in too many ways, it's become, you know, accepted. But as Christians, we need to be able to stand, like you said, the science, the evidence is on our side. We should be able to have that, appeal to that. And as Christ followers, we know how we, you know, we see humans through the Imago Dei. We see them as image bearers. We understand that there is a value in every human life. But again, the courage to be able to stand strong, I think that's something that I know CMDA does well. We're trying to create communities on these campuses so that students know they're not alone. I think that's the biggest danger. So often is we think we're the only ones who may feel this way. And you mentioned that in your book, too, about that one student who took a stand. I think probably a lot of other students were wishing they could have taken that stand or should have taken that stand. And when we realize we're not alone, we can stand stronger and we can be more courageous and bold.
That's right. Very good, Bill. I totally agree.
Well, this has been a great conversation, and your story is just, it's just a beautiful mosaic of God's grace and mercy and his love for us. And thank you so much for, and you and Noreen, to be transparent and to be able to share things that are hard on themselves, but because they are covered with God's grace and love, there's a redemptive value in this that others can see and read your story and know that there's hope in brokenness and hope in any situation we might find ourselves in. And it's, just a great testimony. So thank you for writing that. And I'm going to have a link in our show notes for The Scalpel and the Soul, your book, also 40 Days for Life, too. We want students to be able to, you know, be pointed to some really great resources to be able to do a deeper dive and look more into this. So, well, again, thank you so much for being a part.
Thank you very much for having me, Bill. And I look forward to visiting campuses. You'll have the information. Either can reach me. You've got to spread that word.
Yes.
I love meeting with students and sharing the truth.
We'll do that. Amen. Okay. God bless.
Okay.
Thank you.
And God bless you too, Bill.
Well, this is the time of the podcast where we tell you some things that you need to know. First of all, we want to make you aware of the Global Missions Health Conference. Now, if you've not had a chance to be at this conference, it's in Louisville, Kentucky, and this year it's going to be November 9th through the 11th. This is the biggest medical missions venue that there is. You will have an opportunity to not only get great content, breakouts, and information, but the exhibitors are just far and wide. Hundreds, I think, of exhibitors that will allow you to see and experience and understand opportunities in which you might be called to serve. And so Global Missions Health Conference is a must-do if you are thinking about medical missions, or maybe not, but it would be an encouragement to kind of discover what God is doing all across the world through healthcare. So check it out. It's at medicalmissions.com. It's the website. We'll put the link in the show notes. Medicalmissions.com, November 9th through the 11th. It's the Global Missions Health Conference. Also, another thing we just want you to know is as you are going through your training time with CMDA, that you want to make sure that on your smartphone you have the CMDA Student Life app, and it can be easily found on the Google Play Store or on the App Store. Just simply search CMDA Student Life, download it, set up a profile, and there's a lot of great information, resources, Bible studies, tools. This podcast shows up. Our video podcast does as well, and it is just chock full of great resources that'll be there right at your fingertips. And as always, you can find us on the socials. We use the handle CMDA Student Life on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and those are great platforms to be able to get the latest and greatest information and information about what's going on throughout CMDA. So check those out, like, follow, do whatever it takes, and get connected with us on our socials. Well, as always, if you need to reach out to us, you can do so at ccm@cmda.org. We look forward to hearing from you. If you've got some suggestions on what might be a great idea for our future podcast, we'd love to hear about it. And again, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. And again, we have our podcast notes online, and you can check those out as well on cmdastudentlife.org. And go to our podcast page, and you'll get those latest podcast notes from every episode. Well, thank you for joining us on this latest episode of CMDA Student Pulse Podcast, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is non-partisan and does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Student Pulse Podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.